Good afternoon. I would like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Thursday, April 18th, 2024. We are in the Barnes Committee Room, Room 124 of the Alaska State Capitol Building. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:03 p.m. Today we have President Representative McKay, Representative Vance, Representative Mina, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff assisting us today are Recording Secretary Linda Jensen, Moderator Susan Quigley, and my committee aide Angela Steffel. Thank you, ladies, for your service today. If everyone could silence their cell phones. We have two items of business today. First, we will hear from Brian Hawkins, the Harbor Director of the Port of Homer, and then we will take up HB 395, Transfer of Railroad Property. Our first order of business is a presentation by Brian Hawkins, Port Director, and President of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators, Port of Homer. Mr. Hawkins is on team, so my staff will be running the slideshow. So whenever you are ready, Mr. Hawkins, place your name on the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Brian Hawkins. I'm the Port Director for the Port of Homer and President of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Directors. With me today, too, is Rachel Lord, Council Member Lord for the City of Homer, and she's also one of our two Council Champions for Port Harbor Projects. And in the audience, I also point out that I see Carl Yucatel, Port Director for Juneau Ports and Harbors, and I see Matt as well, Harbor Master for Port Harbor, you know.
Matt obviously doesn't want to be on TV, so he's kind of shrinking back to the wall there.
Next row back, Matt. So if we could have the first slide up, the next slide. Yeah, okay, so I'm not able to see your slides very well. Could you go back one slide? I'm sorry. Thank you. So this is Homer Harbor. Little history on this. The first harbor was constructed and finished in 1965. So I'm just thinking about that today. That's it's almost as old as me. And that's it's kind of interesting to think about that, kind of different than Lower 48. Right? Our harbors are pretty new. The state is pretty new compared to Lower 48. The first expansion of the Homer Harbor was completed in 1986, where we went from a 16-acre basin to almost 50 acres. Currently, we have 920 slips, and the largest vessel we can put in a slip is 86 feet long. We have 6,000 feet of transient moorage. And at this time, we have just over 400 names on our stall wait list for vessels waiting turn to get a stall in the harbor. Next slide, please. Right. So Homer is a regional transportation hub. Its location is central in the Gulf of Alaska. We are the pilot station here for Cook Inlet, all the shipping that goes up Cook Inlet. And we're recognized as the port of refuge for Cook Inlet for vessels waiting dock time and what have you further up the inlet. Homer's fleet is also works throughout Alaska. We are a home port for vessels that work in western Alaska and even up into the Arctic. Next slide, please. So this is just a couple of photos of a busy harbor. You get right down to it. You know, it's not just about boats in a harbor. It's where these boats go and what they do. This harbor started out with a local fleet that fished Catchback Bay, but that's just not the case anymore. Our vessels range throughout Alaska and work in most all fisheries. And The deal is it's, we're trying to be full circle, full service. And as a community, we're focused on providing the opportunity for vessel owners to get the work done here. We know boats, what they need, and that industry, the marine trades industry, is a secondary revenue source for this community, and it's a big driver in our local economy. Jobs in the winter. I always figure that the job in the wintertime in Alaska should count for more. We can all find work in the summer, but it's those winter jobs that really add up. So next slide, please. Right. Pictured here is our commercial barge ramp. And this is a picture of the landing craft, a polar bear loading construction materials for it's actually bound for Bradley Lake Project, the head of the bay. But the landing craft and small barges are generally the last leg for a lot of materials that are going out into the villages and the non-road connected communities throughout Alaska. Construction materials travel from our project site out and get put into use in these communities. So this is an important point that our small boat harbors throughout Alaska are transportation hubs. Next slide, please. I want to put a plug in for Marine Exchange of Alaska and the important role they play in transportation in the state. Keeping vessels safe at sea, tracking these vessels, it's about communication, ship to ship, ship to shore. Vessel owners are able to track their vessels or their fleet of vessels. Coast Guard uses this information. And one thing that's pretty cool about this company is that their ability to expand as needed. You look at the map of Alaska there, you'll see the locations in the Arctic. You know, since that started opening up and we all became concerned about traffic in the Arctic, Marine Exchange has been able to meet that need by putting these locations to track vessels throughout all of Alaska's waters. Next slide, please. And using that information, we were able to pull these track lengths together for vessels that transit through Homer, use Homer as a port. And it's a pretty busy chart, but basically, you know, the breakdown is on the side of the different types of vessels and their uses. I wanted to pull your attention to the lime green track lines that go straight across the inlet from Homer, from Ketchikan Bay to the west there. Those are going into Iliamna Bay and Williamsport. And those track lines are landing crafts carrying materials that get transported across from Williamsport, across Pyle Bay Road, 16 miles of road, to Pyle Bay in Lake Iliamna, and loaded onto barges, and then that barge is taken around and delivered goods to the communities around Lake Iliamna. This location, too, is also stepped up to moving commercial fishing vessels that work in Bristol Bay. So the Bristol Bay gillnetters, homeported in Homer, will go across the inlet, get moved by boat trailer, large boat trailer, put in the bay, and they travel down the bay and then down the river and to the fishery in Bristol Bay, and then reverse order at the end of the season. More than 500 vessels were moved this way last year. Next slide, please. As I mentioned earlier, our fleet is working throughout Alaska and transiting, moving goods, and doing commerce in these communities. We recognize 47 non-road communities, non-road connected communities throughout the state that our vessels are working through, doing work in. You see the arrow pointed up to, from Bristol Bay up, and many of the landing craft that work in western Alaska during the summer season up into the rivers delivering goods up into the communities our home port in here in Homer. It's important to remember that the Arctic and the Western Alaska, there's really no moorage there. There's docks and there's facilities for doing work. As the sea ice is out of the way and the river ice is out of the way, they can get in there and do the work. But then come fall, they've got to see winter moorage, and that's what we're working to provide for them here in Homer. Next slide, please. So we've been working and dealing with overcrowding issues and well beyond our capacity for many years, and talking with the Corps of Engineers, and it's been a long-term project for the city of Homer to build or look at the options for building a large vessel harbor here in Homer. So the Corps of Engineers finally recognized this, and we came together last spring and signed an agreement to start a general investigation. This is a deep dive, 3 to 5 year study on the benefits of building that next generation of harbor. And the goal would be to move the large vessels into that facility, make room for the additional fleet that's not being served in Alaska. And this is because modern vessels, a lot of them are deeper draft than our small boat harbors can facilitate. And many of these vessels are just simply too big for the small boat harbors. One of the goals is to move the Coast Guard cutters that are home ported here in Homer into a facility. The Coast Guard cutter Aspen is moored to one of our outside ocean piers, and it's never been a great situation for that ship. And so it's one of our chief goals is to get them a better facility. And the highlighted area here next to the harbor is the area that we hope to expand out into. And it's a remarkable, why Homer? I guess you'd say, well, why Homer? Why can't we do this someplace else? And the interesting thing is that we actually have a bench that we can grow out into. A lot of harbors in the state, that's not the case. When you leave the breakwaters, you're in deep water, and there's a limit to how big a breakwater you can build, how deep water you can build it in. So we have opportunity here because of this bench and being road connected and air connected and being a hub community like this makes this a viable project in our eyes. And so the goal of the general investigation is to see if it's feasible. A general investigation will end up with a BCR, benefit to cost ratio. And it's just at that point, it's a business decision. So next slide, please. And as I mentioned, we started this general investigation last March. We've accomplished some of these tasks, and we're just keep working on the list. The PMP is a project management plan, and so we've agreed to a scope of work and approved the PMP, and we've walked through a series of alternatives, and environmental field work has begun this summer. Baseline hydraulic conditions established. This is a wave and sediment analysis that built a computer model that whatever structure we build here on the spit, we can run this through the program and see how the wave and sediment would react with this and see how it holds up. So that's a very valuable tool for us going forward for anything. And then we're just about to sign a task order for starting the first phase of geophysical work, which is a bottom profiler. Next slide, please. And so next slide, please. As I mentioned, Alaska is different. State of Alaska, there's 33,000 coastal miles, and in all of that space, we have 47 harbors in the Alaska Association of Harbors. And of those 47 harbors, 10 are road connected. Each one of these harbors are essential transportation hubs. It doesn't matter their size, really. If you're living remote or you're traveling coastal Alaska, you're connecting with these communities. What's different in Alaska is that the area of impact. You're standing on the coast in Oregon and, you know, looking out at the ocean, and to your right, 50 miles is another harbor, and to your left, 50 miles is another harbor. So that's not the case in Alaska. We're hundreds of miles between, and so our fleet ranges much further out, and the area of impact is much larger for our harbors, and that's why they're so much more critical. Next slide, please. So these next few slides, I heard the question about the condition of ports and harbors in Alaska. These next few slides were actually created by Carl, and this part of his work with the American Society of Civil Engineers. And they created a report card for ports and harbors in Alaska. This interesting facts, and I just love that overlay where they relay the state of Alaska over U.S. It's quite impressive. Down at the bottom, I thought it was interesting to note 125 total harbors in the state. 108 of those are under municipal control, and we have limited federal programs to maintain these, so all these dollars count. The 2017 grade is D, and this was largely, next slide. There we go. So we've got a D rating in 2017, and this was, the bullet points talk a little bit about that. So no plan for a start establishedly, Arctic Deepwater Port. Port of Alaska really hadn't made a lot of progress on their improvements. Southeast Alaska Regional Cruise Ship approach to accommodating Neopax Panamax vessels was incomplete. And then the Small Boat Harbor matching grants through ADOT were uncertain. And what's changed is, next slide, we'll fast forward, the Arctic Deepwater Port in Nome project is gotten funding and underway. Next slide, please. We have in Juneau a major improvement in the new public cruise ship docks, and in Huna another private cruise ship dock, and then a private cruise ship dock in Ward Cove, Ketchikan, which was just completed in 2020. There's another private cruise ship dock scheduled for Whittier. That's an $80 million improvement, and that project is underway, is what I understand. Next slide. Improvements to the Port of Anchorage, Port of Alaska, excuse me. So quite a bit of improvement done there, $7 million annual. 2017, the problem was that they had they were spending $7 million annually just for piling corrosion, and the recapitalization project was held up due to a lawsuit. Since then, they've got $1 billion of Alaska Port Modernization Program underway, $208 million replacement of the petroleum concrete terminal was complete. And they've had great success with getting other grant funding for the project to keep that moving forward. Next slide. We see that the ASCE report card is now at C for ports and harbors in Alaska. And the reason for that was Congress authorization to designate Nome as deepwater draft Arctic port. The Port of Alaska Modernization Project is underway. And private investment for cruise ship docks has built capacity for tourism and the economy. The Small Boat Harbor Match Grant Program remains unfunded and uncertain. So with 33,000 miles of coastline, 47 municipal harbors in the state, that's a lot to manage. Well, how do we communicate these communities' needs in the state plan? And currently, that's through the Municipal Harbor Grant Program and the Alaska Municipal League and through the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. Next slide.
Go one more, Julie.
I think I'm one ahead of you. Another slide, please. There we go. There's a lot of information here. I won't go through this, but we've had some great funding wins recently. Next slide. So we're all familiar with the Alaska Marine Highway Service and the needs of that in this state for connecting our communities. This just simply shows that route, and throughout Alaska, it's a quite impressive amount of area that we're connecting with our marine highway system. Next slide. I wasn't sure if everybody was aware that through MARAD, there is an American Marine Highway route. Now, these are designated transportation routes through the United States. You can see the East Coast and the Inland Highways and the West Coast. And if, of course, if you look down the lower left-hand corner, where we always seem to put Alaska, there's a route in Alaska, too, the M5 and M1 route. Now, that route used to end at Dutch Harbor. But if you go to the next slide, you can see that just 2 years ago, MARAD recognized that there was a need to add another route to include the rest of Alaska. So M11 was added, and that goes all the way through western Alaska, clear to the Arctic, connect with Canada and the interior major rivers in Alaska. So this is a big deal, because these communities now that are on the system, recognized in the route, are able to apply for federal transportation grant dollars for infrastructure improvements, too. Next slide.
Mr. Hawkins, before we leave that slide, I notice there's one that goes up Cook Inlet, too. Where does that go?
That goes all the way to Anchorage.
Anchorage?
Anchorage, yeah.
Not so Port McKenzie?
Both, actually.
I don't think Anchorage is designated as a marine highway port, but I do believe that Port McKenzie is. For MARAD purposes. Anyways, sorry, I'm just jerking your chain a little bit.
He's trying to steal our time here.
Sorry. You can continue.
No, it's all right. And I should have told you all that anytime there's questions or anything, you should just speak up.
Yep.
Appreciate it. So, future outlook, I guess, is... let's see, where are we on that slide? Second from the last, please. Should be titled Future Outlook.
Going backwards. There you go.
There. Great. So the Municipal Harbor Grant Program puts dollars directly into the hands of the people who are doing the work. And that's it's been a great program. I really like this program because it is requires a community to come up with 50% of the funding, and they have to have a shovel-ready project before they can apply for the grant. The dollars have been inconsistent. The fund has been funded inconsistently. if we could fully fund that annually, communities will be able to put those dollars to work. And it's the great thing about this grant program through the state is that it allows us to leverage the state dollars with federal dollars to bring real construction projects into these communities. We know that a lot of this infrastructure is well beyond its life expectancy, and we're working to keep it going. My maintenance staff here has rebuilt 6 finger floats this year, which is a pretty big project for a small staff. They're proud of the work, and I'm proud of them for getting it done and keeping those floats and, most importantly, those vessels that lease them on the books, so we keep that revenue coming in. But it is a losing battle. At some point, we will have to just replace it. And so locally, we are applying for a PIDP grant, as well as many other communities around the state. The municipal harbor grant dollars are being used to help leverage those federal dollars. Will bring us all a long ways towards catching up. And so really support the municipal harbor grant program. And we also, as the association, we passed a resolution recommending that the cap on this program go from $5 million to $7.5 million. So in 2006, when this program was established, it was set at $5 million. And the $7.5 million is really just accounts for the inflation. Next slide. So questions, and just this picture here, I thought just a great photo. This is one of our landing craft being rolled out on airbags up into the all-out repair yard for annual maintenance. And it's kind of a get-her-done way of doing things, but it really does work, and especially for vessels that are either too heavy for the travel lifts or too wide. And with landing craft and barges, that's often the case. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Hawkins. So any questions? Representative McKay.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, thank you, Mr. Hawkins, for the very interesting presentation. I'm just curious about your expansion at the Homer Port. Will you have to do a lot of dredging? What's your draft in that new proposed area? Do you have a mine site in mind for the new gravel, or would you be able to dredge that? I'm just looking for, just a little detail on what that looks like as far as water depth and how you might go about that. Just curious. Thank you.
I give a little background on that through the chair. Yes, it is shallow. And that's a good thing. Yes, it will be a dredging project. And we have been working on a dredge materials plan. The Corps of Engineers actually has a plan for the Homer Spit called the Homer Spit Dredge Materials Management Plan. So using those materials to rebuild the west side of the spit called beach renourishment is one of the benefits that we can gain from this project. And so transporting those materials to the other side of the spit and renourishing that beach is one way. Some of these materials can be used to make additional land. So the community is very interested in that. It can add even, small amount of land that's to a benefit. As many of you know that come and visit us during the summertime, land is a premium, so that would be a real benefit. The rock, with any harbor project, breakwaters, it's all about the rock. It gets right down to it. That's one of your big cost drivers. And we have identified a couple of local sources of rock. One quarry that's a new quarry that has met all the specs is across the inlets. And so we're calling that local. It's about, it'd be about 90 miles one way. And the other source would be in the Port Lions area in Kodiak. And so that's a little bit further away, but still very viable. That quarry has produced stone for harbor projects already. And size, all of these things are yet to be determined. One of the steps in the process will be to identify the fleet. We have, to do that, we have to put out a survey and get those surveys back. And maybe argue and arm wrestle quite a bit in order to figure out how big this facility is going to be. But all of those things are yet to be determined. The geophysical work is essential because we need to know now that we've got ground we can build on. And so that was a surprise to us that we'd be doing the geophysical work at this stage of the project. But the Corps came back to us and said, no, we need the information now. We're going to have to adjust the budget, and we need to get it done. So took a little bit of work for us to get our budget together to address that, but I'm happy to see that we'll be moving forward with the geophysical work. When you step back and look at it, it makes sense. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Thanks. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, first of all, I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Hawkins, for your presentation. I love learning about all the ports in this committee, and I learned a lot about the Port of Homer. I just wanted to have an opportunity for you to address an email that was emailed to members of this committee from the Kachemak Conservation Society. And I think you've already answered a couple of those different questions, especially since you just explained the process and the budget for identifying fleet for the port expansion and the geophysical work. The questions that they had just revolved around how do you measure demand? How are community members and operators integrated in assessing demand? What are the costs to maintain? And then also impacts on the community, including environment, local economy, et cetera. So I would love for your perspective on those questions.
Measuring demand. Of course, here at the Harbor Office, we have a what we think is a fairly clear view of demand. We see that in our stall wait list. We recognize that annually we turn vessels away because of a lack of moorage. So we feel like we have justification for expansion. How we prove that in a study is more detailed. Of course, it's going to take more time. The Corps will be running that. We will give them all the information we can, feed them the data, and it's a process. I'm sorry. Rachel, here's your problem to chime in. So,
well, thank you through the chair, Representative Mina. My name is Rachel Lord. For the record, I am a city council member and mayor pro tem here in Homer. And I just wanted to speak to maybe some of the community aspect of that question, because one of the pieces of conducting the general investigation study here in Homer has been a significant amount of public engagement. Certainly the process with the federal government, with the Corps, requires some amount of public engagement. But here in Homer, we really have arguably maybe quadrupled that engagement. There is a substantial amount of concerns and questions from the community in a number of different directions. And the perspective that at least we have taken on the city council and as a city has been one of investigation. The demand in our harbor is very clear through the operations at the port and at the small boat harbor. And the desire from a number of different fleets to have expanded access to waters here for safe moorage for regional operations is fairly well documented. What that looks like as a potential business, you know, all of our harbors around the state are run as enterprise funds. Our harbor is not, our port activities are not subsidized by sales taxes or property taxes. And so, you know, the question will remain for the community, what does this look like in that regard? What does it look like from an environmental perspective? And all of the various questions that go along into a large project like this. So we are very much, as Brian noted, in the exploratory phase, working with the Corps of Engineers, our community partners, and the state in asking all of those questions to come up with a report and an understanding of what this project could look like moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I do one follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Chair McCabe, through the chair. I appreciate that Council Member Lord and Mr. Hawkins for the work that you've done on the investigation study and the community engagement. My other question, and it was mentioned in that email, was related to IJA funds that are being requested. So the email said that there could be some timeline issues, and I believe you're applying for the PIDP. And so I'm wondering if you could address the timeline of the project as it relates to requesting federal funds.
Okay. Through the chair, I think we're confusing projects, actually. So the general investigation study is the city has their funding lined up for that. The PID project that I was referring to is actually for harbor float replacement. So existing infrastructure in the small boat harbor and funds for moving that forward.
And
thank you.
If I may, Representative Mina, through the chair, Rachel Lord, again, the city of Homer has demonstrated, quite an exemplary fiscal prudence in our operations. Both within our general fund, within our utility fund, and certainly within the enterprise fund out here at the Port and Harbor. And that fiscal question of operations and moving forward is certainly is a big question. In terms of the current budget for the general investigation, we have the funds. We were included in the president's FY25 budget. We understand that's part of the process, but moving forward, We do expect to see the continued Corps support. We have the initial funding from the Corps, so we have started that project. City of Homer has set aside the entirety of our local match from this perspective, and we continue to work with you all in the legislature and the governors. Looking at exclusively the general investigation study, knowing that if there is to be a next step, part of the consideration through the general investigation is looking at that economic piece for the city and for the community.
Thank you. And thank you for the clarification between the two projects.
Uh-oh. Representative Vance has a question. We're going to be here forever now.
That's right. It's my turn. I just want to say that they are being very humble because this project has been a priority for quite some time. And there was previously a design map, but I think because this study is going to produce a newer version that they're not sharing that, but they've done a lot of work to become for Homer to be a Coast Guard city and done incredible communication within the community and partnering. But the question that I have is, can either one of you speak to the number of vessels that want to remain in Homer, but are having to go elsewhere, specifically out of state with their vessels and therefore their money. And by expanding the opportunity to bring those dollars and those families back to Homer.
Through the chair, Representative Vance. So it is, I don't have specific numbers of vessels that are not mooring in Homer or in Alaska because of lack of moorage. But, you know, every year I would say easily we turn away a dozen large vessels just due to capacity issues here in the harbor. In the springtime, we stretch that a bit because the winter storms are over, and we feel we can our systems can handle it. These large vessels will be rafted out 3 and 4 abreast. And so I think that more to the question is, if you look at the Alaska fleet that moves, that works in Alaska, but then moors in Lower 48 and Puget Sound, it's actually quite a large fleet of vessels. And many of these vessels choose to do that because they live there. But many of the vessels are going that direction because there are no moorings for them in Alaska. The oil industry fleet, for instance, the rig tenders in Cook Inlet, when they seek winter moorage, there is really no moorage for them here in Alaska. So they travel all the way to Lower 48. And that's hundreds of thousands of dollars in fuel and crew time. And where you spend your winter moorage dollars is where you spend your maintenance dollars. And so that those dollars are leaving the state. And that's opportunity lost. And that's in Alaska where we should be focusing on. It's a missed opportunity. And can we capture that? And can we bring those revenues and keep them in the state?
I have one more follow-up.
Follow-up?
Because I could take all this time. I just might, Mr. Chairman. Both of you have, I mean, obviously you, Brian, are the president, but I know that Rachel's been on the Harbor Masters, I believe, as the treasurer, if I remember accurately. So both of these two individuals are highly knowledgeable. Can you speak to the long-term plan of the ports and how they work together? Because one of the big questions in this building, anytime that a port is needing funding, it feels like there's a competition of priority or the value and purpose of one. And I'd like you to kind of address what the work that the Harbor Masters Commission does in being unified to give everyone a better understanding of how the ports can work together.
Thank you. Through the chair, specific to this project, we don't see this as being in competition with other ports because we believe that we're building the next generation of harbor that is building a harbor for the larger vessels, the ones we're cramming into our small boat harbors right now. And so that and making room for additional fleet that would leave the state if would stay here if they had an opportunity. So we don't see that as competing with the other ports. Actually, that keeps the business in the state and those winter jobs. We grow that industry. So that's a benefit statewide. Transportation-wise, it's a benefit because those transportation vessels, those vessels that work in that industry, being able to do their work here and get out early in the spring, as soon as the conditions allow, benefit the communities that they're visiting. And I was talking and forgot the question.
Well, and through the chair, Representative Vance, again, Rachel Lord, thank you. The Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators has been, you know, a group of people working in the state since the 70s. Officially incorporated in I believe the late 90s, if I remember correctly. And you are correct. I was staff for the association for a handful of years. And I think that the networking, the professional networking and camaraderie that happens within an organization like that is absolutely statewide and, sincerely impactful in terms of kind of a rising tide floating all ships. I think a great example of that is when you see every year the Municipal Harbor Matching Grant Program that the association is advocating statewide for that program to be funded, regardless of whether or not, for example, the city of Homer has a project within that program or looking for funding within that program. we are across the state united as municipalities, municipal harbors, looking to partner with the state on seeing that be successful. And I think, as Brian mentioned earlier, the Municipal Harbor Matching Grant Program is a really great example of a way that the state can help float all ships by having a vetted program. And that program really does have a pretty remarkable set of criteria that are used that are consistent and that are reviewed and well communicated to the stakeholders from the Department of Transportation. I think it is an excellent example, actually, of a way to cost share infrastructure dollars with communities in a fair way from the state. So I think that the association is a really fantastic place where you do have the leadership among our municipal harbors working together to solve problems. And in things like Municipal Harbor Matching Grant Program, several years ago, we worked on derelict vessels, you know, working hand in hand in partnership with our state agencies, the legislature, and our federal partners to collectively problem solve the problems and the opportunities that we see across our coastal and river waters, you know, that impact our interior as well. And I think that that's something that can't be stressed enough, the importance of the state's coastal municipal harbors on the goods and services that reach every part of the state of Alaska, including the farthest interior communities we have.
Follow up. I'm going to toss you a bone.
Follow up.
Thank you for that. Has the Harbor Masters Commission discussed a port authority for South Central? Is that a topic that you look into?
Through the chair, Representative Vance said, no, we have not.
That didn't work.
I'm so disappointed.
Okay, so I have a little bit different, shifting gears a little bit back to Homer. I am curious, do the goods for Homer and Kenai, Nikiski come through Anchorage and truck down the Kenai, or do you have barges, AML, or whoever, that stop in Homer and drop off goods? And what I'm specifically looking at is I've flown over the inlet numerous times and seen a big ship headed towards Anchorage full of containers, and I have thought, I wonder if they stop in Homer and drop a container off. But I don't think you have the harbor crane, the mobile harbor crane or the regular crane, and no place to dock. So I'm wondering if that's on the horizon as the Kenai Peninsula starts to build out, if you will, or if more people start to come there, if it's maybe more in thinking about the Kachemak environmental friends, thinking if that's more environmentally friendly to just have a ship stop there instead of having to run trucks up and down the road.
Yes, through the chair. Yeah, to your question, we have actually thought about it quite a lot. In 2017, we did a deep dive into that question about expanding the port services to include a dock or build a new dock to bring containerized freight into Homer. But when we studied it, we put, you know, criteria and said we don't want a pie in the sky project. We want to know if it's, you know, if it's viable to build this dock that would bring containerized freight. That's a goal, bring containerized freight to Homer. Because you're right, all of the containerized freight goes to Anchorage and then gets trucked down. And so we looked into it. I've got a binder about that thick. And actually, it was a really good piece of work, because what happened was we determined that yes, but not yet. That it's really a matter of economics and population. And so as the peninsula grows, it will eventually make sense to build that facility, to have that ship stop here and drop the containers or cans here that would serve the lower peninsula, and then go up to the next port and finish delivery there. But that's, you know, what the finding was, you know, based on the fact that we have about 65,000 people living on the peninsula right now, that it was still not economically viable for the companies to send the ship here. You know, they every minute counts with them. And so at some point it will make sense for us to build that facility. And the facility needs to be built in a way that we can turn those ships around quickly so they're not wasting time. And that they just stop here on the way.
Thanks for that.
So just to follow up on that, the number that we have learned about was population in the neighborhood of 200,000. Then it starts to make sense. The other drivers for that would be, of course, resiliency, a backup plan, which we all know that that's necessary. And, of course, if you had the facility already, if you had the dock already where they could just come in and just tie up, get off over the loop, that would probably speed that process up or make it happen sooner.
Yeah, I doubt you want 200,000 people on the Kenai Peninsula.
That's what I was thinking.
That's a lot of people fishing on the river. Cool. Any other questions, anyone? Well, Mr. Hawkins and Ms. Lord, thank you so much for your presentation. It's always interesting to learn about another harbor and focus on something other than Port McKenzie. Did I say Port McKenzie again? Twice? And I appreciate it. It's interesting, and your plans look awesome, and I'm sure that Sarah will keep us, or Representative Vance will keep us informed and let us know what you need. So thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. So our next item of business is HB 395, the transfer of the railroad. And this is a committee bill. So my staff, Julie Morris, will introduce the bill, do the sectional, and then we'll take committee questions. We have some invited testimony, and we will take public testimony for the bill. So for invited testimony, we have Josh Verhagen, Mayor of Nenana, Clint Hall with the Hall Quality Home Builders. And from the Alaska Railroad, we should have Christy Terry, VP of Real Estate, Brian Lindemood, VP Chief Engineer, and Megan Clemens, External Affairs Director, for testimony and questions. So are there any questions from the committee before we begin? Okay, seeing none, Ms. Morris, if you could put your name on the record and introduce the bill to us.
Good afternoon, Chair McCabe and members of the House Transportation Committee. Thank you for hearing HB 395. For the record, my name is Julie Morris, staff to Representative McCabe. House Bill 395, an act approving the transfer of land owned by the Alaska Railroad Corporation to the city of Nenana and providing for an effective date. House Bill 395 aims to facilitate the transfer of the land to the city of Nenana. This transfer is significant because the city has been actively managing this land since 1981, investing approximately $29 million in infrastructure over the years. The location of the land holds strategic importance for industrial development given its proximity to the river system, the Alaska Railroad, the Parks Highway, and the Nenana Airport, which collectively serve as a vital transportation hub. By acquiring ownership of this land, the municipality aims to leverage it for further economic growth in the region. The goal for the municipality to own the land under the infrastructure will further economic growth, and the city has a development plan that includes the Nenana Municipal Boat Launch. This boat launch serves as an access point for many rivers such as the Tanana, Totatlanika, the Tetlanika, the Tolavana, the Kantishna, and the Yukon. City of Nenana has invested over $300,000 in the boat launch alone and is a central piece of infrastructure which is located on the railroad property that will be conveyed under this legislation. Overall, HB 395 seeks to empower the city of Nanuet to take ownership of the land it has been managing and investing in for decades, enabling it to further its economic development goals, utilize key infrastructure assets for the benefit of the community and the whole region. And if you like, Chairman McCabe, I can quickly read the sectional analysis.
Sure, that'd be great.
Section 1 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska by amending the new section that approves the transfer of real property to the city of Nenana. The Alaska Railroad Corporation is authorized to convey the interest in the surface estate of approximately 188 acres of rail land to the city of Nenana and provides for a legal description of the property conveyed. Section 2 provides for the effective date under AS 0110070C. And that concludes.
So any questions from any committee members before we start on invited testimony? Representative Vance.
I can wait till after invited testimony.
Okay. So for those of you that don't know, in a situation like this, we, the legislature, has to authorize the railroad to do this. And it's sort of time. This was brought to me last year, actually, by the Nenana tribe. And it turns out that the city of Nenana, who has been leasing this for years and years, has first rights of refusal. So I probably contributed to a little bit of the confusion with the two different bills. This is virtually the same bill, except it references the city of Nenana first, and that's our new attempt to keep the state and the railroad out of any kind of legal trouble. So with that, I think we'll take invited testimony from, we'll start with Josh Verhagen. He's the mayor of Nenana, and then we'll move on to Clint Hall with the Quality Home Builders. So Mr. Verhagen, if you'd put your name on the record and go ahead and begin your testimony, that would be great.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you guys hear me all right?
Hear you just great.
Great. For the record, my name is Josh Verhagen, and I'm the mayor of the city of Nenana. So this is a very exciting step for the city and for our community that we've been working toward for many years. And prior to my involvement over these last 5 or 6 years, back in the 80s, former Mayor Jack Coghill had worked really hard to get this accomplished. So we've been working toward it for a few decades. And I did want to start out by thanking the Alaska Railroad. We've worked closely with the Alaska Railroad over these last few years, especially from 2020 to present. Developing a relationship and trying to seek a win-win solution here so that the railroad can have what they need and that the community can have what we need. And so I appreciate their patience and their support along the way. As many of you guys know, the Alaska Railroad Centennial Celebration was held in Nenana last July. And this is, in and of itself, was monumental. Is it really successful event commemorating the 100-year celebration of the completion of the railroad that happened in Nenana when the President of the United States, Warren Harding, came to Nenana and drove a golden spike. And so it was neat to commemorate that. And one of the things we've been working toward is solving this this railroad port land issue that we feel has kind of held our community back from being able to develop our port and economy. So just a tiny bit of history, that Nenana, as we know it, was built as a railroad town starting in 1916, and it went from a population of about 50-some people and a small Episcopal mission to being about 700 to 800 people within 1 year. And so Nenana was built on the railroad, and it's important, I feel, to maintain a strong partnership with the railroad that's vital for our future. I wanted to thank Representative McCabe for his and his staff for helping move this effort forward. For context, the city of Nenana is in the midst of a 55-year lease with the Alaska Railroad, on approximately 188 acres of land that's been developed as port property and managed by the city's port authority. We are one of the only inland ports in the state of Alaska, and our community has a long-standing history of barging, which we hope to revitalize. As was mentioned, the city of Neenah has invested approximately $29 million into this port, and our lease gives us the first option to purchase if the railroad were ever to put the land up for sale. And though the property has never been put up for sale, we have 13 years left to go on this lease. And due to our significant investments, the many services that we provide on the property to the community, and then many instances of lost investment opportunity from the private sector, in 2019, I began seeking some legislation that would authorize this transfer. And it's just difficult to want to invest more in property you don't own just to have to pay more to use the infrastructure that we've invested there. We currently have about 7 or 8 subleases on this property, and we have significant interest from other investors who hope to bring industry to our port, such as a large-scale sawmill operation, an energy-efficient home manufacturing facility, some recreation and tourism activities, and more. And I think part of the hesitation thus far from some of these investors has been that the city has not been the owner of the land. And so they are, some of these folks are anxious for the city to own the land so that they feel like they can have a secure investment there. We also provide services, as was mentioned, about like our boat launch and our wastewater treatment facility and some public works buildings and a warehouse and our historic rail depot and a lot of other crucial infrastructure for the community that we hope to be able to continue to maintain and develop. As for financial matters, when I took office almost 6 years ago, the city had approximately $10.5 million of debt. And with a lot of diligence and perseverance, we have eliminated our debt by 95%. And so our remaining debt is solely to the Alaska Railroad for just under $700,000. And so with this goal of becoming debt-free that we've been working toward, this bill would be a crucial step to help us finally cross that finish line. The city is not requesting funds from the legislature, and there is no fiscal note attached to this bill. Instead, we intend to work out the details of the purchase with the Alaska Railroad and their board. And although those details of the purchase aren't being worked out here today with House for Transportation, I think it'd be helpful for you all to know that part, if not all, of the purchase plan that we're working on would be because of our investors, one of which will be testifying right after me. So the city is working hard to become self-sufficient and self-sustaining, and we believe that by having some of these economic development projects occurring on the port property, that it'll provide jobs, housing, and revenue that our community has been needing for decades. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify today and would greatly appreciate the legislature honoring our request to authorize the railroad and the city to exercise the rights within our lease to finally purchase this port land and for the betterment of not only our community but for this region. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Verhagen. We appreciate your testimony. And any questions for Mayor Verhagen? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, thank you, Mayor Verhagen, for providing context and for your leadership in the city of Neenah. I just have a question about how the city of Neenah has been working on this purchase since the 80s. What have been factors behind that delay?
Yeah, thank you. So from what I understand, and I learned most of this from Jack Coghill, who's since passed, but I grew up, he was my first boss when I was a kid. And Jack and his son John have told me that in the 80s, I think it was 1985, that the city put forward onto our ballot an initiative for the city to take out a bond for about $2.some million and that bond passed, which showed support from the community to acquire this land. And I'm not sure as to all of the reasons, but there was no bill that was ever put forward. And then there was also some hesitation on the railroad's part to sell at that point in time. And so one of the factors that I think plays into this is that there was quite a bit of an economic industry on our port for a few decades with first Utana barge lines, and then following that was Crowley Marine. But when Crowley Marine pulled out in about 2015 or 16, then the revenue that the city was receiving from that lease, which was pretty substantial, no longer covered the cost of the lease. And so the city fell behind on payments with the railroad from 2015 to present, and no barge lines has come back into that port. So when I took office in 2018, one of my main goals has been trying to invite industry back to our port so that we can develop it again and have some of those jobs again. But again, a hesitation has always been that they feel a little bit of a risk investing in land owned by the Alaska Railroad, and would be more likely to do so if it was owned by the city. I don't know if that fully answers your question.
Through the chair, it does answer my question. Thank you for the background knowledge, and it was really interesting to see some of the proposed projects at the port, at the area.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Verhagen. So next we have online Clint Hall from Hall Quality Home Builders. And we also, just so you know, and I mentioned it earlier, but we have several members from the Alaska Railroad online for questions, if anyone has questions for them. So, Mr. Hall, if you would put your name on the record and go ahead and begin your testimony.
Oh, thank you. This is Clint Hall. I'm living in Kenai, Alaska. And can you hear me all right?
Hear you just fine, sir. Thank you.
Well, I'll just make a Josh Verhagen has asked me to introduce myself and share what our interests are in Nanana. So I'll be happy to do that. We've been a developer in the Kenai area for since 75. That's 48, maybe 50s type years. Here we have built approximately 4,000 homes and land development, water and sewer expansions. And about 20 years ago, we became interested in solid wood homes, log homes. So we needed a mill because there wasn't enough wood products that we needed to build these homes with. So we brought a mill into our area. Unfortunately, back then, to get a state timber contract, we had to take everything down to 4 inches. So we brought a much larger mill and drying facility in. And we provided all the dimensional lumber for all the Home Depot stores in the state, and URESCO and Arctic Building Supply in Anchorage. So I think our kiln holds over 20 semi-loads of logs, I mean of lumber, a charge. So it's a pretty big facility. And we operated that for quite a few years, and knowing that we were going to run out of timber because of the spruce bark beetles down here. When that happened, we're by a barging facility here, but it's just more trouble than we want to go to barge logs. So we downsized our mill and made kind of a laboratory out of it. We built log homes also, and we've insulated those log homes so they all meet a six-star plus rated homes. And they were designed for village communities because back in the 80s, I recall, heating fuels were $11 a gallon, and it was a struggle for the villages. So we decided to bite a bullet and figure out how to create an affordable, super efficient home. So we have done that, and we've built approximately 200 of those. But instead of selling our product to the lumberyards and whatnot, being how there's such a limited supply of logs available to us here, we just are low profile. We call it a laboratory. And through Nanana, there appears to be a several million board foot supply of timber and logs available to us. So what attracts us to Nanana is, of course, that timber supply. The the railroad there to Seward is something very attractive to us, so we can get our patented product on the barge system or the system to Seattle in the lower 48. And the barging of on the river there, that is also very attractive to us because our affordable home is going to become very popular, it appears like, in the village communities. And the road system there, there's going to be a lot of product being trucked out of that facility also. So the airport's also something that's attractive to us. So it's unusual to have all those things available to us in one location. So we are in favor of putting a facility in Nenana, and in partnership in some way with the city would be more attractive to us. So we're hoping that they can obtain these railroad properties because we'll be creating a pretty high, big investment there. But Nenana does have a lot of very attractive things to the company that we would like to expand with. So I don't know what else I can say other than, you know, we're kind of crossing our fingers and Nenana has luck here in obtaining those properties with the size of investment that we'd be making. But this is going to create quite a few jobs, new companies on the road system. We're preparing companies right now for assembly of these homes. These homes assemble in about half the time our stick frame homes assemble. So they're going to be more affordable and very energy efficient. So I think that's probably about all I need to say, unless you have any questions you'd like me to answer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hall. Anybody on the committee have any questions? I've looked at the design of your homes. I think they're fabulous, actually. And with the housing crisis in the villages, particularly for troopers and teachers, I think you're well poised to make a difference in the state, which is one of the things that that we're looking for. And don't forget that eventually, soon, you'll be able to ship those homes out of Port McKenzie.
Oh, that's the third time you've mentioned that now.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much. Nobody has any questions. We appreciate it. So, and thank you, Mayor Verhagen. We're going to go to public testimony now. And I will do that right now. Public testimony is now open. And is there anyone hiding in the room back there for public testimony? Nope. Okay, so I'll go online. The first public testimony is Michael Waleri from the Nenana Native Association, and he's at the Fairbanks LIO. So, Mr. Waleri, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Michael. Good afternoon. My name is Michael Waleri. I'm the attorney for the Nenana Native Association, which is opposed to this bill. And the reason for it is, frankly, that there's a lot of issues that should probably be addressed, and I'll just address a couple of them. Also with me today is Mr. Romy Caliente, who is the tribal administrator for Nenana Native Association. First, as you pointed out, there's another bill, HB 199, which talks about transferring the land to the tribe, and the tribe would prefer that. And I understand the issue recently has come up about this right of first refusal, but as Mayor Verhagen has pointed out, the city is in breach of its leases. It's $700,000 in debt for lease payments. From a legal standpoint, the provision for right of first refusal, which is in the contracts, is dependent upon them actually complying with the leases, which they're out of compliance with. So we're not exactly sure that the right of first refusal is legally obligates the railroad to first offer to the city. There are a lot of reasons why the tribe thinks that they would be a better steward for these lands. One of which is the fact that the understanding of the tribe that they would of course be paying the railroad a negotiated amount for the land, which the city would doesn't want the land for free, but and to expunge their $700,000 debt for delinquent lease payments. But there's another issue here, and that is that one of the main concerns for the tribe is the contamination on the fuel docks, and that much of the land at issue here is contaminated and is presenting a risk health to the residents of Nenana. Contamination occurred on the city's watch. The city has not done anything about it, and the city doesn't even acknowledge that the contamination exists. Nor do they have a plan for remediating that contamination, whereas the tribe has explained to the railroad that they are more than willing to undertake remediation and cleanup of the land and to restore it to a healthy condition. This is incredibly important because the tribe has access to federal funding for remedial cleanup that the city does not. And of course, one of the problems here is if the state were to come in and access remediation through CERCLA, there would be liability to the railroad, liability to the city, liability to the state for the cleanup, as well as a number of other people who were involved in the contamination of the site. The tribe would CERCLA would involve litigation, and of course the tribe has a status of a state under CERCLA, which the city does not. But the tribe would prefer cooperation rather than conflict and litigation to address the contamination. If the tribe gets the land, the tribe will utilize its efforts and with hopefully to clean up the site with no or limited liability to the railroad and the state, because that would be the preference, and the city for that matter. But those options kind of come off the table if the city ends up with the land and doesn't wish to address the contamination issue. That leaves everybody with just one option, and it's not the best option in the world. So there are a number of problems with the support documentation that's in the committee. For example, the letter from the tribe and the governor are not letters of support for this litigation. They're 2 years old, and they relate to the support for the recreational lagoon project, which, of course, was a good idea, and is pretty much completed now, and nobody has a problem with that. But those letters do not support SB 395, and of course, as you're hearing today, the tribe is opposed to 395 because it would prefer to address the contamination issues first. Everybody agrees that redevelopment is needed. The tribe has been working on that, and I'll leave that to Mr. Caliente to talk about that. But the city has been in a state of decline substantially because of the loss of the port tenants. The population has dropped it's down below 360 now, which is legally important because the city of Nenana, in order to be a first-class home rule city, you have to have 400 people. City no longer meets those standards of incorporation, which means that the city is facing possible dissolution or reclassification. The city has stopped performing all of the mandatory powers, particularly the planning and land use regulation. The city has disbanded the police department. The city has disbanded the fire department, requiring the fire department to reorganize as an independent entity, which the tribe has been working with and supporting. Simply stated, the tribe is the only entity that is willing to address and come forward and resolve the contamination remediation
that is needed, and it has been heavily, it agrees that there needs to be redevelopment, but we're not exactly sure that the city of Nenana has been successful and will be successful in redevelopment.
So, Mr.
If you have
O'Leary,
any questions, I would defer until after Mr. Caliente's testimony.
Okay, so Mr. O'Leary, when we put out for public testimony, we put out for 2 minutes, and I let you go on for a long time. So please pass that on to Mr. Caliente that he has 2 minutes, and also please forward the report on contamination. I suspect it's PFAS, which is contaminating virtually every town in Alaska, but please forward that to the committee at house.transportation@akleg.gov. So, Mr. Caliente, go ahead. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, sir. With regard to the disbanding of the fire department required to reorganize, last year the tribe recognizes the need to support this lifeline to its residents by, one, purchasing a new ambulance for the fire department because of its high mileage vehicles due to annual trips going back and forth to Fairbanks. The winter was especially brutal for Alaska. Again, the tribe stepped in, purchased heating fuel for the fire department's office. We support the fire department with salaries, purchases of department insurance, etc., to keep the fire department's performance, this vital, vital work that they do. There's an inability for the city to complete projects without the tribe. The Nenana Bridge, for instance, after completing the project below the grant allocation funding, the tribe has actually worked with the DOT to A, complete the project, complete all the financial report, and is ready to close out the build grant. The current projects the tribe has been working on, we seek to work with all in a meaningful, cooperative, respectable way that benefits the Nenana residents. I must add, Tanana Chiefs is very instrumental to our success. To date, we have accomplished the following that includes 2-year audit, which procurement protocols have been verified and accepted. 20 grants ranging from a Miser TF-40 hydraulic saw to, in collaboration with the Nenana Fire Department, a $24 million Nenana Health and Wellness Complex that will serve 6 communities in the interior. Most noteworthy is the Nenana Native Association owns its own fiber optic internet connection, which phase one in the design stages will transmit a fiber optic signal across the community to residents with the hope of having reliable internet service. Phase two is a fiber to home design and engineering that have already been completed. The application for federal funding has already been submitted, and with any kind of luck, construction should begin in 2026. We are truly grateful for and thankful for Tanana Chiefs and their continuing support.
Thank you, Mr. Caliente. You've reached your 2 minutes. I appreciate it. Although we didn't talk much about the bill, we talked a lot about what the tribe is going doing. So I would urge you to send your written testimony to house.transportation@akleg.gov. And so that completes those online for public testimony. So I'm going to close public testimony. Any questions from committee members before we continue? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Is Mayor Verhagen and the railroad still online?
I think Mayor Verhagen is. You want me to get him back?
Sure.
Mayor Verhagen, Representative Mina has a question for you if you're still online.
I am still online. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, just in response to some of the concerns expressed by the Nenana Native Council related to contamination and liability to the city and to the railroad and other stakeholders, I just wanted to see if you had a response on that.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it. I'm pretty surprised about the, I guess, claims and accusations being made because they have not been accurate or in collaboration with or in communication with those concerns and not been brought to the city from the tribe. But as far as on the environmental side of things, the city is very well aware of the contamination, which is due to three fuel sites. We had three fuel farms that were not operated by or managed by the city of Nenana, one of which predates the city's lease. But this port has been operated as a fuel barging location for going on 80 years. And so the Alaska Railroad and the city of Nenana and Butana and Crowley are all very well aware of these three fuel spill areas that are contained and that are also being monitored every year. So there are monitoring wells that the DEC monitors every year and gives us a report of any changes. And there has been no change. So there is not an imminent threat of it changing. However, it is of concern to the city, and it is something that we have not only talked about, but are planning to address. And in fact, I've met for several years with the DEC, and the DEC, the city of Nenana, the Alaska Railroad, and Crowley Marine all met back in 2018 when I was first elected to discuss this issue and plans moving forward on it. And as recently as February this year, I met with the commissioner of the DEC to discuss what grants and funds may be available to clean up this issue. And as a sign, if you will, of the city's efforts to clean up pre-existing issues that we did not create, in 2020, the city took on cleaning up a few acres of a backhaul project that the Yukon Intertribal Watershed Council had left on our port property from a failed backhaul project, predominantly to our own expense, and hauled tons and tons of stuff to the landfill to get that cleaned up and closed out. And we've also been in collaboration with the railroad, and the railroad's very aware of the concerns of our efforts, and both the city and the railroad are listed as potential liable participants in this environmental issue.
Thank you. I appreciate the response.
Thank you, Mayor Verhagen. Any other questions? I'd like to also recognize that Representative Armstrong has kindly joined us for her edification on Nenana and the railroad. So, anyone else? No other questions? Okay, so I think I'm going to take it at ease for a second. Okay, back on the record. So we have a few questions that are best addressed on the record. So Representative Vance, and I have these, the railroad's got these folks here, so probably either one of those would be.
Mr. Chairman, this may be for you as the sponsor, but it could be possibly for the railroad. And my question is, the legislature grants this approval for the acquisition to take place, but does it obligate the railroad to begin the conversation?
So that's a good question. That's probably better for probably Mr. Lindemood. I don't believe it does. All it does is authorize the sale if the railroad wants to enter into an agreement. And the railroad said, yes, we will sell this land. We don't really care who it goes to. They're kind of agnostic in that thing. It doesn't really say you must sell this land. It just says you may sell this land. So Mr. Lindemood, are you online, and is that a question you can answer, or maybe it's better for Ms. Clemens?
I am online. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, sir.
All right. Through the chair, Representative Dance. The bill as it's written right now is permissive. For the Las Guerrera to sell any property does require a board affirmative action. And so what this, it's sort of a, the way the law works, it's kind of a two-step process where the legislature has to approve it and the railroad board has to approve it. This is, the bill before you is one of those two steps. It would still have to get approved by the board.
Follow up. So the other question that came up is on the preference for the city of Nenana. Is that under your purview of that current lease, and who might have that right to it first?
To the chair, Representative Vance, I can't really speak for the board as far as what their preference is. We've obviously been working with the city for a couple of years now on trying to come up with something that works. The tribe coming up and asking for the same piece of property was a bit of a surprise to us. I don't know if the board has a preference one way or the other.
Follow up. For clarification, my question is, who legally has the first right of refusal? Is that in the lease that the railroad currently has with the city? Is that written in black and white, and is that lease under your purview as a railroad?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, I do not have the lease in front of me. I do know that typically that is in our lease documents. I might lateral to our vice president of real estate, who's probably a little bit more familiar with those documents, if Christy Terry's still online.
Yeah, I don't believe she's still online, or at least I don't see her online. So we're going to have to punt that one, I think. But
typically, the first of right refusal is in our lease documents. I don't know about this one in particular offhand. So that's the most I can tell you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lindemood. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is for the railroad. I've always kind of believed that the railroad was a real estate company that had a railroad as opposed to a railroad that owned land, and that a lot of the revenue is generated from their real estate holdings. So I'm just curious as to what kind of loss of revenue this would generate, and then I also want to know if it runs, because there are now two people involved, if you're subject to the procurement code, and so maybe those are answers, and not that I want to sell off all the real estate, but I know there are a lot of people that like to have some of that land if possible. So,
right.
So two-part question. Is there other lands that are for sale, and basically are you, does this run afoul of the procurement code? Or are you even subject to it?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I did get a text that Christy is online. I don't know what your screen tells you as far as whether she's online or not.
Okay, and I'll interrupt you, Mr. Lindemood. Christy Terry is online. She just happens to be in the same room with Ms. Clemens. So maybe Ms. Terry could answer that question. And so you might have to...
Thank you.
Great.
Great. Thank you. For the record, my name is Christy Terry, Vice President of Real Estate for the Alaska Railroad Corporation. I'm sorry to say I missed the first part of that question. The second part was, are there other lands for sale? I would say not at this time.
First part, oh, the procurement.
Yeah, the procurement code aspect of it, since there seem to be actively two people involved.
Yeah, through the chair, procurement code, in the sense that what we would do is we would bring this to our railroad board. There's a number of findings that they would have to go through, and the decision would rest with our board.
Hello?
Hello. I seem to remember several years ago, maybe 10, maybe more, that there were parcels of land on Ship Creek where there were some attempts to purchase land in that area and for development, and still may be the Ship Creek development area. And is that something that's up for discussion? And I'm wondering if we could include that, if it is, in this particular piece of legislation.
This is Meg, the External Affairs Director for the railroad. And, you know, this land is unique in some important ways. But, you know, as you mentioned, the railroad does have significant real estate holdings for us in operating land and real estate reserve land. And the reserve lands and the revenue are important part of our model as a self-sustaining state-owned corporation. So selling land is not something that we take lightly. It's not something that we necessarily approach to do frequently, but in this case with the city, the lands in question primarily were operating land, not originally designated as real estate for land. And, you know, that dates back to the history of the area. In the early days of the railroad, we had significant freight barge operations happening in Nenana. That's not something that's continuing to occur. You know, we don't foresee a return to operating needs for the land question. And we've been working with the city of Nenana, as well as Nenana Native Association, to answer some of the questions around the land and start this discussion around a possible sale. As Mr. Lindemuth noted earlier, certainly receiving legislative approval to sell the land is an important necessary step to complete the transaction, but it's not the only step, nor would it be the last step in this particular process. So, you know, there's still a lot of work that would need to be done to complete the survey, the appraisal, you know, learn more about necessary steps for the sale, and of course, bring it to the board of directors at the railroad for their approval. So I hope that helps answer that question a little.
One more
follow up.
Hopefully the last question is, what kind of lost revenue are we talking about to the railroad if we sell this? Is the price going to offset future revenues? And because I remember the railroad coming to us asking for general fund money for track controls and other things. So is this going to affect your ability to function as an independent corporation and hopefully still not have you come back to the legislature for general funds?
Yeah, thank you. This is again through the chair. That would be one of the determinations for our board to review. First, that the land is not necessary for ongoing railroad purposes. And then once we're able to finalize both a survey and appraisal of the worth, the board would have to take that into account, look at the totality of the operational budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Terry. And I think I have a question, I think, probably for either you or Ms. Clemens. So it seems to me that in discussions, I heard that the railroad and the city of Nenana agreed to terms with respect to the outstanding money on the lease that you had. So even though it appears like Nenana is in arrears, wouldn't that cure the lease and allow them to still maintain their first rights of refusal.
Yeah, thank you to the chair. We've had those discussions. Nothing's been finalized at this time, and we don't have our legal counsel with us today, so I can't speak to how that would affect that right of first refusal.
Okay. Thank you very much. So I think that's all the questions, unless anybody else has any questions.
Oh, one more question.
Okay. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, this is for the Alaska Railroad. I'm just curious if you have any background for why the railroad decided not to sell the land after Nenana passed the bond proposal in the 80s.
To the chair, Representative Mina, this is Megan Clemson. I don't know the backstory on why that would have happened in the 80s.
Thank you.
But as I mentioned, selling land isn't something that the railroad typically takes lightly. You know, that may have been a factor, but I couldn't tell you further than that.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Clemens. So, Representative Vance, can I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 395, Work Order 33-LS1537/A from committee with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal note.
Object.
Okay, so there is an objection. So would the secretary please call the roll?
Representative Sumner is not present. Representative C. Johnson?
Yes.
Representative McCabe?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Stutes is not present. Representative Mina?
No.
Chair McCabe?
Yes.
4 yeas, 1 nay.
Okay, so with 4 yeas and 1 nay, House Bill 395 is discharged from the Transportation Committee. And any other discussion or questions from the committee? Seeing none, our next meeting will be Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. Schedule will be forthcoming. Seeing no other business before the committee, we are adjourned at 2:47 p.m. Thank you, everyone.